Welcome, everyone, to tonight's Planning and Community Development Committee meeting. My name is Cynthia Delgenos Johnson. I'm the chair of this committee. I'm joined by my council members, Councilmember Hogarty and Councilmember Quinn. And we have lots of stuff to discuss on the agenda tonight, so we can go ahead and just jump in. The first item is on the proposed 2023-2024 biennial budget, urban renewal budget, and we have Derek Speck here who will be teeing up that item for us.
Thank you, Chair. And so this item starts on page one. You'll see it's a very brief memo because basically this was a fund that was where we had the project accounting for Tukwila Village and the motel acquisition and the sale of that to Health Point. So those projects are basically almost all wrapped up. So you'll see there's just a little bit of money in 2023 in case we have some legal expenses, and that's basically it. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Councilmember Hogarty?
No, thank you. Thank you for the information.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just had a highlight, but I just highlighted it for myself. Sorry about that. So no, I'm good.
Councilmember Quinn?
Yeah, straightforward. No surprises there.
There's no policy things.
I did have one question. In the sale of the New Border property, where are those funds going?
I would want to double check with the finance director.
Okay.
I think those are shown in the public safety plan funding model, but I would want to double check that. I hear a confirmation from Laurel. So.
Thank you. That was my only question. So this is forward to the 10-10 committee of the whole meeting. Recommendation, for the budget stuff, we don't make recommendations.
That's correct.
Just forward on.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Are you done with your one?
Yeah. I can. Wow. I've got plenty of work.
Yeah.
Go back to your number.
Yeah. Okay. Next item on the agenda is a resolution for the residential rental housing business license and inspection program fee schedule, and we have Director Gerlach here with us.
Right, so we're in the process of updating our fees for the next biennium, and so this is relatively standard. There's a couple areas that I'd like to highlight for you. One is we're proposing that instead of limiting our in-house inspection service to four units, we allow it for complexes of up to 12 units. I think that's still a pretty sort of small landlord scale that I think they might appreciate having a city option for that. It would also help us bring in a little more money, and it also gets us eyes on some of those small landlords, which I think is a useful thing. So I think it's kind of a win-win there. We're suggesting that we raise it modestly to a $75 charge for that, which is really in line with the other cities and inspectors that we found out there. And then we're proposing that we have 5% yearly increases. And the reason why I'm doing this a little differently than the other fees that we're looking at is some of our small landlords are pretty sensitive to price, and we thought it'd be better to kind of smooth it out over a couple years rather than, you know, inflation's really high now and it might jump now, even though it might go down later. So that was our proposal. We can, of course, look at different schemes for that, but that was kind of our thinking behind that, is to kind of keep it at a steady pace so they can budget more easily. And then other than that, it's really pretty much a continuation of the theme that we've had before. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
You, Councilmember Hogarty?
Yeah, I have a question. This is something I just want to explore with you, and that is that it's about the timing of the raising. It seems logical to do that, and it's not really excessive at all. Well, it's a little bit, but, you know, it seems reasonable. You haven't raised it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty low in the past.
Yeah.
So.
Well, like this one is from 77 to 80. So the thing that I was wondering, if you had thought about this, So we have a 4-year cycle, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you start raising the rent, the rates now, then the people that were on last year got a low rate. And then if some of these, and then the people this year are getting dinged. Are you at the beginning of like the whole the cycle of 4 yet? I guess what I'm getting at is, do you want to wait till you're back to number 1 and then do this?
So everyone gets licensed every year. They just get inspected every 4 years.
Well, that's what I mean, the 4-year inspected. So they only have to pay this every 4 years.
The inspection fee. And then they could use a private inspector or whatnot. The other thing we're doing is it's a lower per unit fee the more units you have once you get over 4. So there is some fee break there, which would be a benefit.
Right. Well, what I meant is that so my inspection was last year, so I got the break. And this is just exploring, might not make sense at all, but to have some sort of maybe equity in this to start it. I don't know how that would work. I was just thinking that, you know, last year's people got off with this much money and now they're starting the increase. But I guess it's got to start something. That was just a thought.
And we did give the breaks during the pandemic,
okay.
Right? So we allowed people to push out. So we actually have a higher number because people haven't been doing their inspections over the past couple of
years. Right. And you waived the fee, right? You waived the...
Well, we weren't offering inspections. We basically pushed the cycle out for people.
Oh,
they didn't have to get inspections during COVID.
So that's all.
That's my response.
Yeah. I think this is a good idea. I also think that there have been some flexibilities that we've provided.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, it's a process of having rentals that you have on a cycle. So what kind of came up for me was I like that we're revisiting this on a regular basis, and we've kind of expanded and contracted because
mm-hmm.
that shows that folks are applying that experience, and maybe, you know, maybe in 2025, you know, we'll have, you know, built such a strong relationship that we feel good about letting somebody else do it. But I think that personal touch is an important piece, and we've kind of heard it along the way from feedback from folks. So I'm not saying that this has to be, because I think we have you built in here a good message. And then I'm just wondering if metrics, putting metrics in there as you expand for the city staff to do it, because then that also has a justification to maybe be revenue backed,
mm-hmm.
right? And then kind of you can build the team and hear back from the team, hey, yeah, we can do it. We like it. We've built the relationship. We've had to come to them for other reasons. It gives us a chance to engage. But being able to have some metrics behind it as we go 5%, 5%, 5%, mm-hmm. be able to show folks what we're doing. Because I think we are more flexible when it's us versus outside, they have less, you know. So that's the only other thing, is maybe building in some metrics in here. And then you can evaluate every year and then share and then justify, right? Because 5% is like inflation, right? And so we don't serve the public well. We don't serve the folks well if we aren't recovering costs either. So I think our metrics could continue to justify.
I think that's really the balance here. I think it's a super valuable process to have and an ally for our, you know, big rental population, but we do need to make sure that it's affordable to the landlords and we don't, you know, make it too onerous mm-hmm. for them.
Are you?
I'm done. Right.
Okay. I'm just wondering, I did hear you when you said the idea behind increasing it every year is to sort of reduce the impact.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, I mean, looking at the increase, it doesn't look like a lot. Is that the only reason why we wouldn't just raise it and have it be a steady amount so that, I don't know. I'm just questioning why the 5% every year, why not just
change it, like, and keep it at that. Because if we were, I think we haven't seen the budget yet, so I don't know what it looks like if you increase the fees, what that looks like on the budget. Like, would it entail an increase in staff for this program so that we could do, like, additional inspections, or I don't know. I mean, just some questions I had.
I think it would just allow us to kind of keep pace with our existing staffing when we're not 100% cost recovery on rental housing.
Okay.
Brings us more into, you know, brings us a little more revenue, but we couldn't provide the level of service we do now strictly based on our fees unless we raise them quite a bit.
So, I mean, I'm in favor of the 5% increase, especially if we have this kind of come before us on a yearly basis to kind of see what the impact is. Is there a reason why late fees aren't changing? Like, why there's no increase at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think we find that, you know, it's obviously not our goal to collect late fees. It's to motivate people. And we found people to be pretty motivated, actually, by $10 a month, which doesn't seem like a lot. We have much better compliance after we put late fees in. So it didn't seem necessary, but we certainly could do that, too. I mean, most people, if they're going to do it, they only accrue 1 month or 2 months of late fees, and then they, you know, get tired of doing that. And then we do a lot of reminders too around that. So if a different number is better, we can certainly do that.
I don't know if you guys are motivated, but maybe it's just something we consider, like, for next year. Because I know right now we're still recovering from COVID, and so there's folks that, you know, haven't had their inspections, but maybe it's something to watch for.
Mm-hmm.
Are the folks who are not in compliance?
You know, we're down to a few at this point. Most people, you know, people got out of the habit, I think, a little bit when we had paused things, but then once we did some outreach and education, everyone, you know, I remember I need to do this, and I think we have a handful of people that haven't done it yet that we haven't connected with, but mostly have.
Okay. Councilmember Quinn?
Yeah, I just recall our conversation around permitting challenges and other things. And one of the things, Nora, that you said was communication is the most important thing. And, you know, at some point you might say, hey, we're getting no movement. But I just like the concept of keeping up communication, because what we don't want is folks to not get their license and then operate poorly. And then that's the relationship that they maintain. So not that I'm soft on folks on late fees, but this concept, which we encourage you to do, is keep up communication so that you can get a path to getting, you know, getting in good standing. Because it's more important if you operate to come to the table and get that business license and do the rental inspections.
So my thought on it is that it's per unit. So if you have a 4-unit property, you're probably like this is something you bought as a family investment, that's $40 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have 20 units, that's $200 a month that you're getting dinged to not get your units inspected. So I think it's
reasonable.
Yeah, it's $10 because it's compounding itself, right? It's like $10 plus $10 plus $10. Unless it's just like, do they typically just not get their whole set inspected, or is it like they just miss a unit, or is there something typical that you know about? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so the penalty per month is per month per license. So you have one license for the complex or for unit, whatever it is.
Oh. I'm sorry, I was looking at inspection fees.
No. And then the penalty fee if a new unit is leased, and that could be per unit. But no, we don't have big apartment complexes coming online that don't know about our rental housing program. Mm-hmm. It's mostly a person buys a house, sees as a rental, and they don't realize we have a rental program. So usually looking at a small landlord for that one.
Just late fee per unit, but the unit is not a, an apartment. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter. You know what the call.
Sorry, I have so many questions.
Okay.
Is there a reason why we have the inspection every 4 years as opposed to like every 2 years?
You know, that's the way we set the program up initially. I think we were concerned about the amount of time it would take to manage that. And when we set it up originally, it was supposed to be 100% fee recovery, and we did all the inspections. Mm-hmm. And so I think we were looking at staff capacity of how many inspections could we do in a year and could have, you know, divided the number of units by four and kind of looked at it that way. Mm-hmm. Now that we're not doing all the inspections, you know, we could look at the structure of the program differently.
Okay. I guess that's not something right now that we're so late in the game to look at, but I don't know, maybe next year look at what it would look like to have a program that full cost recovery. I don't know. That's just something I'd be interested in.
No, I just
think it's an important program.
I think you're onto something. I mean, the goal was to get to every unit. And if we're contracting out, does the cost match what we would, you know, accomplish with making sure, for, you know, stuff is inspected? And so I'm just curious, there's going to be a net cost on, okay, we got to up the contracts so that we can do it in a year. And so it would be a cost benefit analysis for the annual. This is how much we're paying out, and we know that it's not a full cost recovery. It's probably, I'd be curious to hear from the folks that do it,
yeah,
the contract, could they do it? And what would concern me a little bit, they might miss something.
Oh, like liability?
Well, no, I mean, they might miss a terrible place, and then we hear about it from the school because we've got sick kids coming to school.
And I'd be curious to know how much the larger apartment buildings are paying for inspections right now. Because, you know, if it was a program run by the city, would it be more cost efficient to them? I don't know. And would we get full recovery, cost recovery? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, private inspectors have their own kind of scheme. Some of them are just hourly and they get through as many units as they can per hour, or they might charge again higher for the first couple of units and then lower for units after that, but it just varies by who's doing it, how they do that. So we do keep a list of approved inspectors. Anyone can ask to be put on the list because we do need to allow property owners the choice of picking their own inspector if they want, but we want to review the qualifications of anyone that's on the approved list. So we make sure that they're a licensed home inspector or an architect or have a contractor's license. And if we do question their inspections, which we have done before, we can go back and say, we need this reinspected because everyone passes with, 100%. That doesn't necessarily seem like you're really looking closely at things. So.
Mm-hmm. Did you
want to? Yeah, I think these are really good questions. And there was, in this committee, I think before there was an issue with somebody who seemed to be just like passing. Yeah. So we want to make sure that that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But I do like your idea of maybe every 2 years instead of 4 years. And since I went through all this, if the 4 years was because it was management, something about managed workloads, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you looked at the inspection list, which I did because I was curious,
mm-hmm.
These are things that a lot can happen in 4 years. Mm-hmm. So like, so maybe like in the future work plans, obviously not mm-hmm. right now, we could revisit that. We mm-hmm. maybe this committee might make a recommendation to revisit that in a future work plan.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea. And then I have a question because I don't remember the answer to this. When a unit turns over, does it have to be inspected before the next person moves in?
No.
So So that is another reason for every 2 years, I think, would be another reason for that.
I like the interim stuff too. Like, we can come up with a recommendation and say, let's try 2 years, see what that looks like, build a process, come back to us with a work plan. Uh-huh. And then that way you're not taking everything at once.
Yeah.
And you're not,
you
may not have the staffing to do every year and then take it all on, but you got, we can have the ante to do 2 years.
And I also meant by the work plan that you've got a lot on your plate right now. So that part of the work plan, the other part being, when can we actually realistically explore this in the way that it needs to be explored with the staff capacity that you have right now?
You know, I feel like we should be doing some outreach to the landlords and hear about them and make sure we get their side of the story. So, it will be an effort to do it properly, I think.
Right. But how do we not lose these comments? How do we make sure that they're memorialized so that you know that it's something that we would like to see as a committee, at least?
Right. We can certainly put it on the work plan.
It could go on next year's work plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you could prioritize. I want to be really sensitive to prioritization, but it could be on the list, right? So, yes.
I'm just on that. Yeah, no. You're my process.
Yeah,
to me, that is a very significant work item that may need a quorum of the full council to direct staff to put it on next year's work plan. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think given the level of outreach and, the heartfelt opinions that people have about the program, it's going to take a bit to get them.
But how do we not lose this thought? I understand that maybe it's 2 years out, but how do we not lose this thought that this is something that we would like to see considered, even if it's a couple of years out?
Yeah.
How do we do that just in general? Committee minutes, I put committee follow-ups. But do those get lost, or is there do you have a track? Okay, so there you go. It's honestly have some way to remember that this was something that we'd like to consider. And then at some point something's going to happen that makes it like half critical mass. That's probably when it'll come up. So
it's like the policy on traffic cameras.
Yeah. At some point.
We were thoughtful in saying, can we figure out if we can pay for infrastructure? That's what you do, right? Mm-hmm. And thank Laurel for reminding us that we had already went there and, work from there.
Okay. So. Capture in the notes. I think it's going to look at Norris and I think there has to be thoughtful. This would be a big item in itself that would take time to really examine the program. The two instead of four, like what would this look like if we brought it in house? Just like that model, the cost model, and there would have to be outreach too. Landlord.
Ordinance development, right, Nora? Is the cycle in the code?
Yes. And we probably want to do some research around what are the other rental housing programs cycles so we could, see where we fit in.
All right. Well, is everyone good with this?
Yeah.
As it is written.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was asking for consent, if that works for you guys.
Yes. All right, on to the next item, a resolution adopting a consolidated permit fee schedule. Back to you.
All right, so this is the big boy. So we try and get all of our permit fees together in one spot. It's easier than having a bunch of different kind of fee resolutions floating around there. Again, for the most part, we're asking to kind of continue on with the same framework that we've had in the past. For this one, I am suggesting that we increase fees at 8.5% for 2023, and then hopefully inflation might moderate a bit in 2024 and go down. I'm suggesting 7%. And then looking at changes to a couple of our other fees, like our per hour inspection fees. So we can kind of talk it as we kind of go through the resolution itself. There's a couple maybe decision points here. A number of years ago, I think really related to the Howard Hanson Dam question, where we were concerned about flooding, we instituted a $20 residential remodel permit. And the idea was that if there were storm damage or some kind of flooding event, that we wanted people to get permits when they're repairing the damage to their houses. So we wanted to make it as low cost and easy as possible. And the table didn't actually come out that well in the past for some reason. So I printed it. You can see. So I think it also has the advantage of, again, trying to make it easier and cheaper for people to come in and get some eyes on their work so that they don't create building code violations for themselves. And so it's sort of done a lower fee, but more of a public service for some of these smaller threats. Now it's a pretty small dollar amount. Last year we could have recovered an extra $24,000 had we been charging our standard fee instead of this lower fee for homeowners. So just in the interest of budget, I thought I'd bring it up and see if this is still the direction we wanted to be in.
What's the standard fee? Sorry.
So it would just be following our normal fee schedule that's in the...
Is this it right here? This is...
So, yeah. So the 16 permits, we got $431 when we would have actually gotten $7,300 if we'd been following the regular fee schedule. Because it's a flat fee. And so it...
Are we going to take these, like, as you present them to us and share our comments?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay.
But let's go. Flat fee is $25 per permit. What's the flat fee?
Yeah. So it's basically, it's $20 plus the state fee that we can't do anything about, and it comes out to about $25.
Okay.
Just to clarify.
Okay, so this is to me, if you don't mind me starting, I remember this happening too, of course, but so this is a discussion that I don't know the answer to. So we would go from 20 to 2,171, which, so I'm looking at this chart.
These are all the permits.
These are the other permits, not the 21.
We had 100 electrical permits that qualified for it. The total fee we collected for those 100 permits is $2,171.
Oh, okay, I see.
So about 217 per permit instead of the $25 per permit.
So I guess I missed it. I thought I read it. So what are you suggesting that the fee change to?
That we don't have a separate fee, $25 fee. Everyone just pays the normal fee that's in the fee schedule.
And what is that fee?
It depends on the value of the construction. It's in that. It's in the fee.
Where is it?
So like
21.
Thank you. So it would be like a $254. Or is it in the ordinance somewhere?
If it was a building permit,
okay,
she was coming in on, then you would look on page 31.
Okay.
And then you'd look at what your total valuation is for the work you were doing and read over to what your fee be.
Okay, bear with. Okay, so let's say you're doing $2,000 to $2,400. So it could be $145 for the first $2,000 plus.
Those are standard.
Yeah, 20.
Yeah, so it's just their standard schedule.
Yeah. So it's not from 25 to this. You're getting this work done.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, so now it's
$25. You're saying you're going to take that.
And go back over to here.
So yeah, so you just be walking in like anyone else. We wouldn't make a distinction between single family homeowners doing small projects and anyone else.
And a business.
The special fee is for single family homeowners.
This one that we're looking at on page 31.
The 31 is for everybody. And anyone who needs a building permit comes in under this schedule.
So homeowners, residents, and businesses.
Yep.
And so if you're a single family homeowner, you either you did or did not pay the fee on the fee schedule.
If you were eligible, if your remodel was under $20,000, you pay a flat $25 fee.
Okay.
And then after that, you go to the schedule?
Well, yeah. If you're if you don't qualify for this special fee, then you just pay
go
the normal fee.
Straight over to the this fee schedule right here. Okay.
Or over 20K, right?
Yeah.
Right. So 20,000. So we got to go down to, it might go from 20 to 145. Well, I got to do some math here.
Yeah, say it was a $25,000 value.
Yeah.
Then you'd be paying 674.
Okay. Gotcha. So is that what... Okay, so we're talking about residential remodels. They're going to do something that's $20,000, which is pretty much anything substantial anymore. Mm-hmm. My bathroom costs way more than that. So,
I mean, and it is really pretty small scale projects.
Yes, yeah, small scale projects. So now it's 20. Let's say it's 20. So let's say it's $600 instead of 674. I don't know what the it is. So they're going to go from paying $20 to $600 for a fee. I'm just wondering what kind of barriers that is. I'm exploring.
Yeah.
I'm exploring.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I can be done. I know we're I can exploring be done. And we can kind
yeah.
of like
I can be go done right now.
This. Is this, I could see the reasoning behind why this was implemented in the first place, but I also know that like this is, this area, the permits is something that we've all been interested in wanting to address. Like, would us changing this mean an increase in the staffing that's available to do permits so that more people could do remodels? Because one of the feedback things that I've heard from community members is that, like, it takes a long time. Mm-hmm. And would being able to collect, like, fees be able to enable us to increase staffing in this area so that permits could be, so that more like building permits could go through quicker or like inspections could be done quicker.
So last year it would have given us an extra $24,000, which is okay. a pretty small fraction of an FTE. So it probably wouldn't have a particularly noticeable effect.
Okay, so I have to make another comment, and that is that I think that there's been a lot more work done in the city of Tukwila than there are permits reflected right here.
Correct.
So that's really the question right there.
It is a major area of emphasis for code enforcement is to track down the people that are doing obvious work that don't have permits. We don't see as much as it's a bathroom, it's
yeah.
in the back of the house. We all know just driving by, but... It's the people with the porta potty out front, and we're like, I see you're doing something there. So that's probably not catching these people so much. Like if you're flipping, that's just going to be more.
And this is just in the last year. This is what you got last year, or that I'm looking at the table again.
So yeah, what Rochelle did was look at all the $20 permits we issued last year, like how much, how many. What we actually recovered from them, what they would have paid under the regular fee schedule.
So this is like 2021?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it says that. In 2021, right here. Okay.
Go ahead, Nishan.
I just want to take us back to what we're asked to do. And so a resolution adopting a consolidated permit fee schedule and thinking about it kind of in budget and recovering fees. Acknowledging in 21 and 20, the whole world was upside down. And so in some ways, people just did whatever they wanted to do and they actually had money to do it. Now we're getting back to reality and there's a safety component associated with permit fees and then there's a cost recovery associated with permit fees. I think this is on the path to getting back to normal, and but also not sending a message that you don't have to, like, that to do this stuff, and inspections are free or discounted. Like, this is for safety too in neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And so there are components to the permit process that make sense. So I was just saying, comfortable what's here.
Comfortable changing it?
No, I'm comfortable with what's here and what's being proposed. And I guess that is changing it from the flat 20 to a more cost recovery model. And it's, at least for me, it's not to get money. It's what's required for a $20,000 remodel for safety and other components. We have had cases where people went off and done things and then they had to tear down, or we had to try to unwind, just thinking about Shasta. And it was like so far gone. And if they would have just came in, and might have saved everybody. So it also saves people money from doing something, wiring or other things that are significant that require a permit and a professional, a safety professional to review.
You have thoughts?
I do, because Shasta was a business and this $20 fee was residential. So, but not to put, I think that, so here's another conversation to have. Going back to the fee schedule. Well, actually, I want to ask one question, which I forgot to ask. So you said this, but I just want to make sure that you make clear the intent of the $20 permit fee when we first put it on. It was with the Howard Hanson Dam. Was it that long ago that we did this?
You know, I was trying to talk with Jerry and figure out when it was, but he was thinking that was his recollection. It was, you know, it was kind of an emergency preparedness move. We were thinking about disaster recovery, storm recovery, and, you know, a tree falls on your house. Can we encourage people to come in and maybe get a permit and do that flashing, right? So they don't create a roof leak versus, you know, oh, I'm not going to pay $600 to get that permit. I'm just going to, you know, handyman up on my ladder kind of thing. So that was the intention, again, to lower the barriers.
So what's changed since that time that we did this as an intent to lower barriers? What has changed?
I guess our budget has changed. And this is, you know, if we were kind of trying to put a cost recovery lens, this is one area where it's very clear that we're not attempting to recover our costs so much on these small permits.
So we would make $24,000 more by asking our residents to be paying $600 instead of $20 for a permit. So here's my thought. The permits are the same whether you are residential or business. What if you made two different fee schedules, one for residential that gave them a little more relief since they are not actually, you know, their house is not an income producing property as in businesses, it is an income producing property usually. So what if we made the what if we made Sean?
Oh my God.
So anyway, what if we had a different fee schedule for residents? And I know it's 25 to 4,000. I know everything adds up, but I'm also thinking about people with, you know, tight budgets with houses that need to have repairs. And we want them to do the right thing, right? So what if we had a schedule that was different than business?
So back in the day, for land use permits, we used to have two different fee schedules, one for single family and one for everyone else. We did get into some questions around that from the auditor saying, if it takes you the same amount of time to process a short let and MDR, is it an LDR? What's your basis? So I guess we have to look at whether expanding this to the entire fee schedule is something we could do.
But they haven't questioned this special $20 permit fee.
And really, I think because they have not, and I think
you know, we've sort of had it under the umbrella of sort of emergency management kind of thing. It's possible that we could get questioned about it. It hasn't happened so far, and it's a pretty minor amount. So.
And I think we would have the justification. One of the things you didn't say on the emergency fee is if we did get money from the federal government, we can then get it to the people that actually need it because they've documented the damage.
Mm-hmm.
They've documented those components, and so then we can issue.
I'm actually okay with going the route of, like, what do you call this? Like, making this aligned with the building permit schedule that we have. Because it doesn't seem like the issue that was before that created this is still in existence. I did have a question as to whether, like, do we have any kind of program for people who might not be able to afford the permits, but to address safety, like, need to get updates? Is that the small housing?
The minor housing repair?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think that probably would be the only money you have available for that.
Okay. So there is a program to help residential people in the residential realm, maybe not the business realm, but at least the residential, if they're unable to afford like a fix that would, for safety reasons, they can use that program.
It does have parameters around it, but it exists. And is it like $2,000 maximum? I can't remember.
They are small.
Yeah,
they
might have been better. But it certainly addresses that.
I think Commerce needs to create more grants for, because I think that's how you kind of, it's not theoretical, but that's how you keep housing affordable. You don't force people to sell their homes to get money because they can afford to, you know, renovate and keep it safe and keep it.
Commerce grant, but it doesn't stop us from going to them and advocating for more money.
Well, I could sit here and hem and haw about this for a long time.
Okay.
Well, so maybe we should just forward it, and I would like to, my forward vote would be with no recommendation, because I'm just sitting here thinking about it right now. I'm not saying, I we need to do something. I'm just trying to think, what that thing is. It's, you know, maybe, is it?
So this will just be a part of,
So this is basically one line of the fee schedule this here. On that last page, minor residential remodel plan review and permit projects valued up to $20,000. So would we keep that sort of next to last line in the fee schedule?
So I would say, if we have a recommendation, we should move it forward, and it doesn't have to be unanimous.
Right.
But I think we got to get out of the practice of sending no recommendations forward, because that's what committees are.
Yeah.
We need to have a agree, make our point, but unraveling and starting the conversation all over again doesn't.
I know. I just hate to say no, because it's not really no, but I'm not really. Oh,
can I ask a clarifying question? So the staff proposal, as written, includes that $20 fee.
So it's a status quo recommendation, we just brought it forward because if we want to change things because in the name of cost recovery, this is an area where we could make a change.
So your committee recommendation could be for the resolution as proposed or for the as amended, striking that $20 category. And that could be a divided recommendation if Councilmember Hogarty doesn't agree with that.
It could be reflected in the notes. I've seen that done before.
Yeah.
Where it's like the committee recommends, Councilmember Hogarty is abstains or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Or I recommend
not.
But just that one thing. I mean, it's like, that's the thing is I hate to
it's
tie things up, but I don't want to, but I really do have questions about that. So, you know, I don't want to.
We got to make choices. Here's the other consideration is The budget.
Yeah.
We have a budget. So you might be informed by this proposal, and it could potentially educate you on making a
$24,000.
Not $24,000. Talking about the structural pieces of budget. And if, and then here's the other thing that I'm pretty concerned about in dealing with permits is this. What's the term? I remember just Shelley drilling in my head around arbitrary versus kind of across the board. And you got to justify whatever it is. Now we know that emergency is not the thing. So if we're willing to take the risk as a legislative body and answer the question, would we be willing to take that risk? I think that's a broader conversation.
Yeah. Now, memory's a funny thing. I don't remember this being linked to Howard Hanson Dam, so I would love to see the minutes from this and see when it was. I mean, from when we did this. So, but I could be totally off base because if the reason was because of an emergency management, then I would be like, yeah, I get the I get that. But I'm just not remembering Howard Hanson Dam being linked to this, but I could be totally wrong. So. Because then I still have questions. If it was like that, then maybe I could say, yeah, okay, I get it, emergency management. So I'd like to know that piece. That might make it easy.
And the auditor piece, yeah. Right? So we have the same information that the auditor is looking at.
I mean, what was the other one?
The auditor.
Auditor. Yeah. And that's a big big deal, Deshaun. I didn't think about that maybe making it be problems legally. So, yes.
Different.
Yeah. I knew this was going to be a long time. Sorry. I had so many questions about this.
Do we want to continue on? Because that was just one
thing. Yeah. We got a lot to go over still. Sorry.
Let's keep going.
Okay, so what am I supposed to be saying as far as, do I say no or do I say, what do I say?
Are you in favor of keeping that $20 residential category for under $20,000?
I need more information. That's the problem, but I don't want to stymie this. This is why I don't want to say I'm in favor of it. I just want it to move on.
Yeah.
But I don't know because, like, it's information dependent on whether or not I'm in favor of it.
I think it's a divided recommendation out of the committee, mm-hmm. and then perhaps by the time the council takes action on this, you will have that information. And if not,
just say no. I can say no and then change my mind, right? Okay. Yeah, because I'm time.
So when you say no, you're not in
no.
There's nothing.
I'm not in favor of moving this forward.
It's a striking the $20.
You're right. $20. Okay. And just say I'm not in favor of moving this forward just so that it kind of marks this. But I am in favor.
So you're in favor of the resolution as written.
Yes, as written.
At least that those two, well, like there's two lines actually in there, but the mm-hmm. the two lines that reference the lower fee, you want to keep those as they're written now.
Because it's as written right now. Yeah. We're the ones saying
think you should delete those
two. Yeah, and then when I get new information, then I'm like, that'll change my mind.
Oh, God. Sorry, this is really confusing, but I think you guys understand
Okay. See, this is from my problem.
Yeah, we got more.
Yeah. I know. Oh, my God. We got to keep going. What else we do?
All right. So the next section is infrastructure and right-of-way permits. So this is related to TMC Chapter 1108, which is a public works chapter. And it talks about, you know, how you can work in the right-of-way, what permits are required. And we had kind of a complex schedule where we had six different types of permits. And the chapter, we got some advice from the city attorney that the chapter needed to be rewritten. And once we looked at it, we thought we could really significantly simplify it. So there was a staff group that worked on this for really almost a year. I was not part of that so much, but it was really the hands-on permitting people who looked at that. And so they condensed things down into just a right-of-way use permit, and then an annual activities blanket permit. So those are the ongoing, like the utilities or, you know, Comcast who are out there doing work in the right-of-way on a regular basis, as opposed to Olive Garden, which needs to run its sewer line once and never has to work in the right-of-way. Yeah. So two flavors of permits.
And you'll get the chance to review that whole set of changes in 1108. It's going to go to transportation and infrastructure on the 17th, and this resolution, if it stays on schedule, and the title 1108 will join back up at COW on the 24th. Okay. So it's a whole new scheme of how to regulate. We think easier for everyone to kind of use and understand. And then along with that, we are proposing the same 8.5% and 7% fee increases for 23 and 24.
Councilmember Hogarty.
I think I've created enough problems already. I did have a question. I'll just ask it. Page 22, I was going to ask this, but I think that I know what the answer is. So the platting, I was just thinking about like somebody who owned their own home, and let's say the short plat, that it costs, does it cost $4,000 just to look into it or to actually do it?
That is the fee for 2 to 4 lots.
To look into it or to
the whole process.
So what if they look into it and they say no, do they have to pay that amount?
Well, I mean, they can come in for a pre-app, which is just a couple $100, and find out whether it's feasible or not.
Okay, then it's okay. As long as I don't have to pay $4,000 and then find out that they don't, that it's not possible. Okay.
Generally, no.
Mm-hmm. So you already went on to the next.
Oh, did I go too far? I'm just like going through stuff.
We're talking about the.
I'm just trying to move
the right of way permit.
Oh,
first, but we'll get to the
point. Okay, but then you've already got my comment for that. And my comment for this is, what's the technology fee? I just forgot that. So, is it an easy question?
That's what pays for.
Oh, I'm sorry. Like, do you remember the amount?
Technology fee?
Yeah, or is it a percent?
It's 5%.
That's my
question.
I didn't have. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Deshaun.
Nope, fine. I don't have any questions. But actually, I do have a question. You kind of talked about how. I just want to make sure I understand this. You talked about how it would make it easier. So I just want to just reiterate. Thought is after assessing. Thinking about other projects that have happened and have gotten confused, I think about 42nd and 160th and the intricate right-of-way fees that we had to all unravel. This will address that by the way of the rewrite.
I mean, that's the intention. We had, you know, 6 different permits with a couple different flavors under each of them. And then we were looking at it and we're like, well, what are we really reviewing? Yeah. What are people really That's doing? Right. Does it really matter if it's a nonprofit versus a business? You know, the work is really the same for us. So that's where they really boiled it down.
And I don't have any specific questions about this, just general questions. So go ahead and continue on to the next subcategory.
So then that was just these land use permits where there were a couple areas where we felt like we were out of sync with either the amount of time we were spending on some of these permits and or what our neighboring jurisdictions were charging. And so we're recommending that some of these fees get raised. We spend a tremendous amount of time on short plats and subdivisions. There's a lot of details that go into it. There's a lot of different reviewers whose comments need to be aligned. And you're thinking that it just should be a higher fee if we're talking, again, cost recovery. You know, development agreements, it's, you know, public hearings and big legislative action, and $2,500 just doesn't really come close to the amount of staff time that gets spent on those.
So you don't have any questions. Sean, do you have any questions?
We're just going to ask the exact same question I asked in a different way.
Yeah.
Because I think you informed me on it. The intent of this is to, one, capture some fees, but also kind of continually look at our neighboring jurisdictions to make sure we're on par with them.
Right. So we want to balance you know, capturing the fees where we feel like we're spending a lot of time with making sure that we're not completely out of sync with the neighbors, even though that's really sort of a secondary concern. You know, I think the council usually wants to know, are we making ourselves less attractive mm-hmm. place to develop? And so that's why we provide that information.
Yeah. I'll say that's the only part, but
I mean, I think you spoke about my two general questions that I had, which I think you just addressed, are the rates in comparison to neighbor cities and exactly what you said, which is if our rates are like much higher than other cities, then that might discourage development here. I think you talked about that already. And then, you know, we haven't had the ability to look at the budget yet. And so my second question was, if we increase these fees, is there any additional funds that we'll be able to recover that will go into this program that could help improve things, or will it just be maintaining what we have?
If you let us keep our permit revenue, that would be one thing, but it all goes into the general fund, and then it's your decision about how to allocate that money back out.
Okay.
So
yes. So the answer is we.
I mean, that could be a justification for council for deciding to staff us differently. It's not, you know, the permit revenues, they feel it would support that level, okay. But technically it all goes in the same pot.
Thank you. Okay. Are we good with forwarding mm-hmm. this on and capturing Councilmember Hogarty's our
decision?
Yeah. We're the ones who are not aligned. Not that. Okay. Next agenda item is a resolution adopting a consolidated. Oh, wait. No, we did that one. Sorry. Last one. Grant acceptance for middle housing.
Yes, like 20 minutes. Sorry.
This is a large issue. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Thank you. So the city applied for a grant. Commerce has had three grants available to cities to use for comprehensive plans. One we didn't go for, the climate change. And then this one, which is the middle housing grant. And then the other is a general update grant, which you'll see materials on that coming up. This one is worth $130,000. What it requires is, this is a, I don't want to say carrot and stick, but it's mm-hmm. might be perceived as that. It is an opportunity to fund a racial equity analysis and then to also develop anti-displacement policies in the housing element. And this is a required element of the GMA for this coming update of the comp plan. The second thing is that it requires us to analyze and consider adoption of policies and code language that would allow middle housing on at least 30% of the lots or area within the city that is currently zoned for single-family residential, which is the very substantial question for council to consider. Also, it does provide us with funding to contract with community-based organizations, and they made available $20,000. We asked for $30,000, and they said okay. So it's for us to allow us to reach out to community-based organizations, which is another element of the comp plan updates that is important and is required by both regional guidance, like the King County planning policies and the anyway planning policies, and also Vision 2050, as well as Commerce, to be more inclusive of the full community in reaching the conclusions that the comp plan arrives at. The other aspect of this particular grant is that all this work needs to be done by the 30th of June next year. So the reason the legislature made it available was they've been talking about housing affordability and supply and choice. And they had considered, you may have followed this, they considered but did not pass a mandatory requirement
that all cities adopt middle housing codes in single family. And it is expected that they will again take up the issue next year. So the what is middle housing? It's a range of buildings that would fit within, visually fit within, and almost also sort of density fit within existing single family. It's duplexes through sixplexes, townhouses, courtyard apartments, cottage housing, and stacked flats. They are designed to be compatible in scale and form with community, with single family homes, usually like no more than 30 feet, and fitting within the existing envelope that the is currently within the single family. They're intended to provide a diversity of housing choices in both form and affordability and in neighborhood character, and then ownership opportunities. If you look on the front page of the presentation that was attached, you can sort of see the range of housing types that are included in the concept of middle housing. And this is a type of, the middle housing is a type of development, a form of development that you don't see in every jurisdiction. I mean, I lived years in the Midwest, and the housing is older, and there's a lot more integrated duplexes and triplexes in the single family. So in some communities, later developing, like you see in Washington State, I guess they're less frequent. So they include things like duplexes, fourplexes, townhouses, duplexes stacked, courthouses, courtyard buildings, and cottage courtyards. And they're all intended to be sort of just options that people looking for different types of housing. They are not necessarily offered as more affordable housing, but they're just a housing option. And then also they will provide, depending on how they're constructed, they will provide different affordability or a different financial package ownership elements. So there are pros and cons to accepting the grant. The pros are that the city is not mandated to adopt the zoning or the standards. We can, the purpose of the grant is to analyze and take the temperature of the community and to move forward with a recommendation that this be a type of housing that's accepted within the city. It's an opportunity to evaluate the middle housing and get more feedback than, potentially we would get if we don't do anything and the legislature says, okay, so be it, please adopt all these things by a certain date. So it does provide that opportunity to have a little more community discussion. The grant funding also pays for the racial equity analysis and the anti-displacement policy development that is required in the update coming forward for the 2024 plan. Another element that is offered in this grant is that Commerce has staffed up with some additional staff who we can take advantage of in completing some aspects of our plan that exceed the necessarily specifically addressing the middle housing question. They can, for the racial and equity analysis, that type of thing. The cons are that not a lot of time. It's hard to find consultants. Everybody's having staffing problems all across the board. And also, there may be some resistance to that. There would certainly be some resistance in Center Quadrants to having the discussion about community attitudes or about adding missing housing and allowing it to their middle housing and allowing it to be integrated into existing single family. So the recommendation is to forward this to the committee of the whole for future or for additional conversation, and then have it go to the regular meeting the 17th of October for consent agenda once that's been discussed. So any questions?
Councilmember Hokey?
I have questions, but I'm going to go right to the point here. I think we need to accept this grant, right? And I think the cons are, one of them,
have any timeline is short, consultants are tightly booked, you know. that's in your guys' wheelhouse. But the community attitudes really are in our wheelhouse, because we are not required to do anything with this information. And we will, and yet we can do so. For anybody who's resistant to this grant, we'll say, hey, we don't have to do anything with it. We can just look at the information if we want. But it's like the world is a different place. We've got to do something. And you're right. We don't live in the Midwest or in the East where they had all those big houses you could divide into. The, like, you know, what you, yeah, the rural houses or something where you could divide them up, even like, you know, in Bellingham even, or places like that, or on the East Buffalo where my son is. All these great big huge mansions are just divided up, and they're downtown, and they provide a lot of density downtown and a beautiful environment. We don't have that. So, and I mean, I could go on and on. Duplexes, what a great model for people who want to move, buy one and then move out the other side. And this is something that we're really lacking. So the time is now. I say we do this, and it probably won't look exactly like what they're saying here. It might not be 30%. Did I say I really liked this memo? It's so thorough. I mean, it was just everything was really, really well laid out. And you showed the picture of the example of that buffer, or you know, that area between TIB and 42nd that we've all been looking at as far as maybe a place to do this. And so I say, yeah, let's stay on your timeline and go through with this. I think this is a great opportunity. The big challenge is going to be just your workload, you know, in the department.
May I add one thing to what you just said? We do, to be compliant with the grant, we do need to put together a recommendation. There's a recommendation to go forward that is how we would accomplish 30%. That's our minimum. So then it moves forward into, you know, we can identify and presumably have received a lot of input from the community that indicates what the, you know, what the attitudes are about this kind of housing and how well it would work within the city.
But we can, you know, then after that's your outcome, and then we can take it from there.
That's
it. Councilmember
Quinn?
Yeah, I'm comfortable forwarding this. And I agree with Kathy. The way this was laid out in the memo was very informative. And I think that's the piece along the pros, not a con, where we continue to educate the public and how we get there. And then the other thing is, like, we did what, 1990 urban growth boundary, and you know, we need to tap in and see what's working and what we need to do differently. And then the last thing is the racial equity analysis and the kind of anti-displacement piece. Like, I think it's an opportunity that we can demonstrate that we've taken a hard look at what could work, because I think when this bill came up before, it was going to be basically an exemption, so taking that authority away from cities. And I think if we got to do some research if we want to fight the change and educate. I'm not on the fight the change, but like, if we're unwilling to even do the research, then if and the other piece where city council do land use, that's part of our responsibility. So we got to be able to demonstrate that we're willing to do it and look at it. And then everything that we've heard, either whether it be from the various classes of that have come through Foster and housing issues, like, I mean, I think the question is, how many people are not going to do this for us to know? So we can show how you can do it, right? So I'm all for research and data to help inform decisions. So I'm comfortable exploring this. But I also think it may require an education on the history, because some people don't have the history. But it was preemption. Nobody wants to experience preemption, because we want to pontificate on the dais. You can pontificate all you want and have that authority taken away from you. So that's all I'm saying. You can you can kick it and scream it and like all that doesn't matter if you get to the fringe.
Mm-hmm. I'm in favor of moving forward with this.
Yeah.
On to committee of the whole. And then to the regular meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great memo information. And that concludes our meeting unless there's miscellaneous. No? All right. Thank you.